Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformation. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
We are live here on Life Transformation Radio. I am your host, Master Resilience Implementer, professional speaker, and author, Sean Douglas. Welcome, welcome, welcome to all of our listeners who are listening from wherever you are. This show is currently heard in 28 countries, such as the U.S., Brazil, Canada, France, Australia, and New Zealand. So thank you so much to everyone who is listening from around the world, from wherever you are. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformation. Here, we tell the story of why we are doing what we're doing and how we are helping others to transform. Listen to us every Wednesday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern and on the first and third Fridays at 5:30 p.m. Eastern as well. On the show, we have impactful and amazing guests that are not only impacting everyone around them, but it everywhere they go. If you have any questions for any of the guests, this is actually a live show, so if you're listening, you can call in at 657-383-1109. Again, the call-in number is 657-383-1109. And my guest today is no different. He is amazing and impactful. He's a professional speaker. So help me welcome to the show, Tom Singer. What's up, buddy?
Hey, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Dude, I am super pumped, man. So coming off of the amazing event that you and I were at, the New Media Summit in San Diego, California, man, and we met, I am super, super pumped to have you on the show today, man.
Well, I'm really glad to be here. It was fun hanging out with you in San Diego, and I love your podcast. I listened to the last episode when I was out on my run today, and I'm just amazed at the type of people you have on here. I don't know if I've gone through a transformation like Matthew Tyler, your last guest, but I tell you, you do good work.
Oh, thank you so much. So if you're ready to get started, man, let's do this.
Let's go.
Let's do this. So this title of the episode is Cool Things Entrepreneurs Do with Tom Singer. Tom has an eclectic background working in sales, marketing, and business development roles for Fortune 500 companies, law firms, and entrepreneurial ventures. He believes that all opportunities come from people, and when we work together to find cooperative significance with others, we all discover more success. Singer is a professional master of ceremonies, speaker, trainer, consultant, and the author of 12 books on the power of business relationships, business development, entrepreneurship, sales, legal marketing, and presentation skills. He speaks regularly at business and association conferences around the United States and beyond. He is also the host of his widely popular Cool Things Entrepreneurs Do podcast. On his show, he interviews entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, and business leaders from a variety of industries. He encourages his guests to share tips and ideas that can help those with an entrepreneurial spirit find their own path toward success. Tom and his wife, Sarah, make their home in Austin, Texas, and are the parents of two highly spirited daughters. You can find his show on iTunes, find his podcast on iTunes. You can also go to www.tom, which is T-H-O-M, Tom Singer, S-I-N-G-E-R.com, TomSinger.com. Dude, 12 books, and you regularly speak everywhere. Like, you are like a professional badass.
Well, I mean, I don't know that I'm a badass, but tomorrow, and I mean, we're in the end of September, tomorrow will be my 64th presentation to an audience this year.
Wow, 64th.
Yeah, my goal every year is more than 50, so I think I've reached my goal for this year.
I think so.
Well, it's also a record year. I'm also way up over anything I've ever done. I've had a transformational year. It's been awesome.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that's what I absolutely love. That's what I absolutely love. So the first question on the show is always why. I think that when you can harness that, the moment when you said this is why I do what I do and you can move forward, it's got to be the most asked question ever in the world. So the first question on the show is why? Why did you decide to do what you do now?
Well, so two things. First of all, is as a kid, I desperately wanted to be like a television and movie actor. I just loved everything I saw. I got involved in drama in middle school. I was in the head of the drama department in high school. You know, I had the leads in all the plays. I absolutely loved being on stage and performing. But my parents didn't think that that was a totally awesome idea. My parents thought that you should go and get a regular degree at a regular college.
Yeah.
And then if you wanted to go pursue something like that for a year or two, you could give it a try. But that's really not the way the world works, right? I went to college.
Right.
And, you know, then I got married. Then I moved across country and I had kids. And it's not like I could look at my wife when we had a little kid and say, let's drop everything and move to Los Angeles. I want to try my lifelong dream. So you go into sales and marketing and – but being in sales and marketing, I had to go to a lot of conferences, and conferences have these speakers, and some of them are celebrities and some of them are industry experts. But in the middle, sure, you have these people who have written books and they're there to inspire. And I thought, wait a minute, that's a better job than the job I have. I want to do that. And when I finally was able to get to that point, I realized, oh my gosh, I'm on stage and I'm performing. And so I actually got the best of both worlds. I got to do what I do, and it fills that childhood dream a little bit of being a performer.
Awesome. So on the show, our theme is how we transform and then take our transformation coupled with our why and use that to inspire a lot of people, which I'm well, no doubt that you do that all over the United States and while on stage. So can you tell me who you were? Let's go back maybe 10 years. Who were
sure.
you up to this point? If you look back at your former self 10 years ago, who's Tom Singer?
Well, my ladder was against the wall that I was raised to put my ladder against. My father worked for 40 years for an insurance company and retired at 65 with a gold watch. And so although I didn't work for a single company, I changed jobs several times. I was a sales guy. And then later I moved over into marketing. But I worked for Fortune 500 companies. I worked for a couple of law firms as their marketing director. I worked for some startups, but they were other people's entrepreneurial dreams. And I was the marketing or the sales or the business development lead. And I was good at it. You know, I broke records in some companies. I always did well. But that's who I was. I had my ladder against that corporate wall. And I was continuing to climb it, but it was the wrong wall.
Wow. So through the past 10 years, can you pinpoint exactly that moment where you're sitting there, okay, enough is enough. This is my moment. This is my transformational moment. I'm going across the country. What were you doing at that moment when you decided I'm going to be a speaker?
I'm going to be a speaker. There's two pieces to it. Number one
sure.
is when I went to work for this law firm 15 years ago as their marketing director, I had been in sales before that, and the law firm had been my client, and I had been able to steal all of the business from the competitor. And when the company I worked for closed their office in Austin, the law firm said, wait a minute, we don't know what you did. Don't move away from Austin like my company wanted me to. They said, why don't you come work for us? And while we don't have salespeople in a law firm, we do have a marketing role, and we'll sort of let you recreate it in your own image. And so the lawyers allowed me to sort of set up my own department as what became known as sort of business development. I was one of the first people, at least in Texas, doing this for law firms, where I was sort of a pseudo-marketing salesperson. And the managing partner told me he wanted me to create a class for the lawyers on how to network, because I was really well connected. He goes, I want you to create a 90-minute class for the lawyers on how to get connected, you know, in the community. And what happened was I thought they're going to fire me. And I did my 90-minute presentation, and one of the partners raised his hand, and he said, I have a complaint. And Sean, I swear to God, I thought, really, this is how you do it in a law firm in front of 50 lawyers? You're just going to say what you hated about the presentation. And I looked at him and I said, okay, Ronnie, go ahead. And he said, this was too good. This might have been the best training I've ever been to as a 15 years as a lawyer.
He said, but it was too short. This should have been not one 90-minute class. You crammed too much stuff into it. This should have been three 90-minute classes spread out over the next couple of quarters. And he said, I want you to develop more, and I'm going to make the lawyers who work for me go to additional classes. You're going to teach this once a quarter. And they started having me coach some of the lawyers on how to do business development, and how to, you know, get on boards and how to be involved in the community. So that sort of sparked this whole, hey, I could do this. I mean, they started sending me to the other offices in the law firm, and those offices were like, my God, your marketing guy is great. Hey, I remember the Washington, D.C. office of the second firm. I changed firms with the lawyers. One firm went away. We went to another firm. And the second firm, I was in the D.C. office, and this one partner asked my boss, can I give him to my client? I have a software company who is having a conference, and they're having trouble finding a good speaker. I think he'd be great. Can I give him to him for a day? And at the end of that speech at the software company, the CEO said, why are you here? And I literally thought he didn't like this, right? And I was kind of backpedaling. Right. He goes, no, I had two speakers. I paid that guy $7,500. You were free to me. And I said, it wasn't free. I'm on salary for the law firm. And he looked at me and said, I bet you make $7,500 every 2 weeks. And I started like adding on my fingers, and I was like 3, 4, 7, carry the 5. And I was like, yeah, pretty much. And he said, wow. That's what I paid that guy to be here this morning. And that's when I started thinking. So that was the first part of it. But the second part happened. Uh-huh. I left the law firm. I went to a bank. I left the bank. I went to a consulting firm. And I was working for this consulting firm. And on April 1st, 2009, I got laid off in the middle of the worst recession since the Great Depression. More people were being laid off. They say April 2009 was the bottom of the recession. And I got laid off, and that was it. Boom, gone. Sayonara. And trust me, the irony of being laid off on April 1st has never been lost on me. But the truth was, I called my wife and said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go become a professional speaker. And she was extremely supportive and said, all right, let's do this. She knew it was my dream. I'd been working towards it for a while I was working for these other companies. But I don't think she believed – I think she was afraid we'd lose the house. But she was like, okay, let's try it. And it took a while, but eventually, 3 years later, I started earning the type of money I had earned in corporate America.
Wow. Man, what an incredible story. You unlocked a passion that you're like, wow, I can really do this, right?
Well, there were certainly some days where I thought, what have I done? But yeah, step by step, I definitely was the tortoise and not the hare. I had over that path from the time I gave the first speech with the lawyers to getting laid off, like 5 years had transpired. But during that 5 years, I had been studying the business of speakers. I had been making friends with people around the country who made their living as non-famous, working paid professional speakers so that I understood it was a real thing. So it was slow and steady. And then once I started doing it full time, I didn't earn an income for 3 years, at least not a corporate income.
Yeah. Wow. Man, that is amazing, dude. Geez. So I have a two-part question, and some of these questions coming up will be like a two-parter. So the first part is, what has been the best part about your transformation?
Well, like I said, as a kid, I'd always wanted to be an actor. And then as another part of me, I always wanted to work for myself. Having changed jobs several times because of the economy going up and down and companies having layoffs, I was laid off 5 times over like a 15 or 20 year career. I like the fact that I'm in control of my own destiny. Now, it may not work. You know, I could have hemorrhaged cash for 3 years and had to go get a job, but at least I tried. So I like the fact that I went for it. I went for my dream. And in fact, I mentor this guy who's 28 years old, and he just moved from Austin to Los Angeles with the dream of becoming an actor. And part of what I told him was, don't be 50 years old and look back and say, I never tried. So part of what I like is that I went for it and created my own path in the world. And so far it's working.
Yeah, no, definitely. So with every good part, there's got to be kind of a lull or a bad part. So what has been the worst part so far about your transformation?
Sean, you mean it's not all cotton candy and flowers? What are you talking about?
It's not all sunshine and rainbows?
Yeah, I'm not shooting rainbows out of my butt every day. What are you talking about, dude?
Right.
I mean, the reality is working for yourself brings with it a lot of uncertainty. I'm the primary breadwinner. My wife at the time was a full-time mom. She, 10 years ago, took a part-time job because the kids were in school. But, you know, she works half-time. And it's, you know, she makes great money. God, she's so good at what she does. But she doesn't earn enough money to support the lifestyle that we have become accustomed to. So it's all on my shoulders.
Right.
So the part that's bad is when I have a down year and the first 3 years were way down, credit card bills go up, borrowing from relatives go up, you know, borrowing from Peter to pay Paul happens all the time. And that's scary for a guy who wants to have financial stability. You know, it's scary. And then I got up and then I had a couple of years that were flat and I had a daughter go away to college. And while my business was still good, it didn't grow to cover college tuition. So for the last couple of years, I've gone backwards again. And now I'm growing it to catch up with, you know, with my financial responsibilities. But that's the part that really stinks is I have to carry all of that on my shoulders. I am a true solopreneur. I work for myself, by myself. The other piece is it can be lonely if you don't surround yourself with others, but I've done a really good job of building a support network of some amazing professional speakers and podcasters and people who do what I do. So I'm not alone.
Perfect.
But there are times where it's very lonely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. So speaking of that network, because I totally believe that your network is your net worth or equals your net worth. And your net worth is directly reflective of who is in your network. So let's talk about that network. Who has been your biggest influencer thus far?
Well, you know, it's interesting because what I've been teaching for 10 years, a big portion of the keynotes that I do, the message that I weave in when I'm a master of ceremonies, mm-hmm. is how do you connect, right? I mean, my main keynote, I have two topics that I talk about. One is about the paradox of potential and how people see their potential and then they see their results and there's oftentimes a gap. So there's a little paradox about that. But the other topic I speak about is connecting with people in a gadget crazy world, because over the last 10 or 15 years that I've been speaking, people have moved more and more and more over to just staring at their phones all the time. So it's actually gotten harder.
Yeah.
So when I started speaking, people said, well, you can't talk about networking. That's a fluffy topic. Too many people talk about it. Well, no, it's become an amazing topic because it's gotten worse and it's gotten harder and nobody has told the younger generation how to do it. So I have job security. But my biggest influencer, my biggest thing besides my dad, I mean, my dad was awesome. He was always supportive. You know, even though he didn't understand me wanting to pursue being an actor or working for myself, you know, he was always a good role model. But the other person has to be one of my friends from college who was the first person I met in the dorms. Later, he became one of my fraternity brothers. His name is Dave Morris. And when I was struggling to start becoming a speaker long before I got laid off, he said to me, stop complaining. What do you need? And I said, I need to write a book, but I tried. I can't get a publisher. And this is before self-publishing was an option. And this was before online publishing and ebooks existed. And he said, well, what does it take to write a book? And I said, I need money to publish it and I need an editor. And he looked at me and said, I know this sounds horrible, but how much money? And I threw out a number, which to me was a big number. And he said, you know, I don't think that's a gargantuan number. I can't just write you a check for that. But let me talk to my wife. And his wife was actually a communications editor for corporations and had always wanted to edit a book. However, didn't know what to charge for it because she'd never done it. So she had turned down a couple of clients who had asked her to edit their book because she didn't know what the scope of the project was, and she doesn't like to undercharge. So it was a great chance for her to learn. So them both being serial entrepreneurs and people who just think bigger than I did, they called me up and said, we found you a publisher. And I said, yeah. And they said, yeah, we started a publishing company and you own part of it. We're going to send you the paperwork.
Wow.
And he literally, he and I and his wife started New Year Publishing, and I wrote a book and she edited the book. And now New Year Publishing has done, I don't know, 30 some odd books, all of mine, but then another 20 or 30 for other people. And she learned how to edit, and she's edited several books for several CEOs out in Silicon Valley. And, you know, she has an amazing sort of corporate communications consulting firm. So she doesn't have time to edit books anymore, I don't think, but together we started New Year Publishing, and that has become, you know, sort of just a piece of my life. But I mean, how many people have a friend who say, what's your biggest obstacle? And then forms a company to take that obstacle away.
To meet that obstacle. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I have to give him credit because
I would
never be here if I hadn't moved into that dorm and joined that fraternity with that guy. And, you know, 15 or 20 years later, he just said, let's make this happen. This is your dream. Let's make it happen. And he put in several thousand dollars in to start the company. And of course the company has paid him back, you know, since then for sure.
Right. I wonder, I've heard a couple of times, like if you're searching for something and you can't find it, then go ahead and make it or go ahead and create it or go ahead and, you know, I wonder, I mean, in this case, it sounds like it, right? Like I had a challenge. How do I do it? I'll just invent it myself or I'll just, you know, create something myself and then we'll just go and do that. And, you know, it's been successful. I wonder in what other areas we can apply that to our life. You know what I'm saying? Like in business and wealth and investing.
I mean, I know examples of thousands of people who just, you know, some people see a roadblock and some people see an extra hike through the mountain. You know, it's like, oh, okay, there's a roadblock. We'll go up this hill and down this valley. So, you know, I wasn't the person who saw the path, but I had a friend who did. And that's something I remind people all the time is you don't have to have all the answers. You just have to hang out with the people who have all the answers.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. So on the flip side of that, who's been your biggest supporter? Oh, and you can't use your wife because we all know the wives and family and that's all going to be, you know, supportive. But who's been your biggest supporter outside of that?
Well, you know, I would have to say that you know, I'm going to say my wife and my kids because I travel. I think this year I'll be gone 120 nights. And if you're going to be gone a third of the time, you've got to have a wife and kids who say, that's okay. You're following your dream. We're cool with it. And it was harder when I had two kids living at home and when they were younger. But my oldest kid who needed, you know, she always wanted my attention. She wanted me around more. She has moved off to college, so she doesn't care where I am. And my 15-year-old, who's at home, is extremely, you know, independent and is 15. So she's watching Netflix and talking to her friends. So, you know, and my wife has been very good about saying, okay, this is your dream. It's not my dream, but I'm on board. So I would have to say them. But then I have to go back to these friends, Dave and Leslie. I mean, for 15 years since we started New Year Publishing, they have been, you know, a business partner. But they have also been sort of moral support. And, you know, not everybody gets to have friends, I guess, that, you know, become their business partner and have their back. But one of the things he said when we started the company was he told me flat out, he said, look, before we sign the articles of incorporation of this company, there's one rule. And that is nothing hurts the friendship. If we lose money, we lose money. But nothing hurts our friendship. And for 15 years, we've lived by that.
That's awesome. Love that. That sometimes, you know, when you get into business with family or some friends and money's involved, it's just, it becomes kind of messy. It becomes kind of blurred. You know, that's great that you guys had that and says, you know, that's not what's going to happen here. That's awesome. Perfect. So do you feel like your transformation's complete then?
Oh God, no, I don't think your transformation's ever complete. The one thing I've learned as a kid, I mentor a bunch of people, a couple guys who are both in their late 20s. And I tell them all the time, nobody ever told me how hard life is. I sat at 28 thinking, well, after you climb the corporate ladder, you have enough money, you buy a house, you have a spouse, you have a couple of kids, you go to Europe in the summer, you know, how hard can it be? And so I tell them all the time, life is hard. And just when you think it's easy, something happens and you get thrown a curveball. You know, I had a daughter who was born with a medical condition and she's fine now, but that year was not a lot of fun. There's always a curveball that comes along. And when I was 49, I sort of accidentally discovered that I don't want to call it depression because that's not fair to people who battle with real depressive issues. However, I was sad. I was sad and I was looking around and when I came to terms with what was going on, I looked it up and I found this term online called hidden sadness. And it turns out it was really common, like middle-aged white guys around the age of 49. And it's not only hidden from the rest of the world, but you hide it from yourself. And this article I read, I was like, oh my God, that's exactly what I've been doing. And I made a decision then and there that from age 50 to 75, I was going to make that the best years of my life for my business, for my personal life, for my soul. 50 to 75 was going to be the most fun. And see, a lot of people think, oh my God, I'm turning 50. I'm so old. And I'm 51. I have a lot of friends who are going through that around this time thinking, oh, the best years are behind me. Well, my father, my dad, who I absolutely adored, he was 52 years old when I was born. So
wow.
He lived to be 99. So I don't even have a memory of him until he's like 58 or 60. I don't know, how old are you when you start having vivid memories, 7, 8 years old? You know, my vivid memories of my dad are when I'm 10, 12, 15, 18. He's already into his 60s at this point. He was very pragmatic. He told me when I was growing up, something could happen to him. By the time, you know, he would be 70 when I graduated high school, something could happen to him while I was in high school or college. Well, life throws you curveballs. My mom died when I was 18, right after I graduated high school.
Oh, wow.
She succumbed to a 5-year battle. Yeah, she got breast cancer when I was 15. Mm. And most of my college years were helping taking care of my mom. Now, I still went to prom, and I still did all the stuff that high school kids do, and I went to parties. But, you know, on the weekends and at night, it was a different story. I mean, I had to learn to cook dinner. I had to learn to do my own laundry. You know, my dad and I would have to go on trips by ourselves or whatever was going on if a cousin was getting married. And she died right after I graduated high school when I was a freshman in college. And I was really scared something was going to happen to him because he was 70. And he went on and lived to be 99 years old and had a very full life. And he never remarried, but he always dated 2 or 3 people at a time. We used to joke that dad always had about 4 girlfriends at once. But he lived a very full life. He bowled, he golfed, he went to the racetrack. He was like in the senior men's club. He played bridge. His calendar was more full than, you know, a college kid. I was in a fraternity and my calendar wasn't half as full as my dad's. And he had a really good time up until the last few years. His, you know, physical life caught up with him. But he spent 25, 30, you know, years from 70 to 95, pretty darn active. And I decided from 50 to 75, that's going to just be my next era. I'll worry about 75 and on after that. But the next, you know, that next thing, I'm going to have the best time of my life. So I started transforming how I approach things. And I don't get upset about stuff. I don't worry about stuff. My business is doing better. Yeah. My personal life is better. My soul is better. And I'm consciously choosing to do that, but I'm only in the early stages of this. I mean, my hope is by the time I'm 60, I can write a book and tell people, here's how you do it. But I'm doing it. And so I'm just in the middle of a transformation, just in early stages, you know, 1 year in.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I'll tell you, my daughter, who is 20, said to me, wait a second, what about age 30 to 50? You're saying you want to make, you know, 50 to 75, the best years of your life. What about the last 20 years? And I said, those were hard. I was raising you. Raising kids is hard. And it's not about me and your mom. It's about you. If you're going to raise kids correctly, they come first. Well, guess what?
Yep.
They're almost out of the house. So, you know, we're going to put ourselves first and make the next 25 years just awesome.
Just creating moments. Yeah, I love it. Love it. So speaking of the past 20 years, if you had to go back, would you change anything or would you do anything different?
You know, the only thing I don't know. If you change something, it changes the path is sort of the way I look at it.
I believe
I like
that
science
wholeheartedly.
I love that science fiction where, you know, you change one thing. Like, what if I didn't go to that bar the night I met my wife? You know, my wife would say, well, we were soulmates. We would have met at the supermarket a week later. And I'm like, I didn't go to the supermarket. You know, I don't know. So I don't know that you can go back and change one thing. If you know, you just think about things, you know, if you hadn't made love to your wife that one night, it would have been a different kid, even if you had a kid a week later. So I don't think I want to change anything, but if I could change one thing, I would have had the gumption to go for my own path earlier because I was well into my 40s when I started my own way.
Yeah.
And maybe it was in my 20s, maybe I should have given a shot at being an actor, or maybe it was just being in my early 30s and started my own business. But I would have liked to have taken control of Tom Inc. a lot earlier.
Tom Inc. There you go. I love it. Love that. So what do you think, let's transition a little bit. What was the best resource that you have found during your journey with no one's help? Might be something that you stumbled on. It might be like experiences, that one thing, not like a physical resource, maybe it could be anything. It could be emotional. It could be a book, it could be a video, something. But what was that one resource that you just kind of stumbled upon that says, so thank God I found this. What do you think that resource was?
So for me, it was the National Speakers Association. So early on, long before I could have legitimately called myself a speaker, when I was early just doing those speeches for the law firm and going to their clients and speaking for free at Rotary Clubs around town, somebody told me, you know, you should check out the National Speakers Association. And some people think, oh, is that a speakers bureau? Are you signed with them? No, that's a, it's a trade association. It's like the National Locksmiths
right.
Association or the National Plumbers Association.
Yeah.
And it just happens to be a association of people who make part or all of their living through the spoken word. Now, it used to be, it probably originally should have been called the National Keynoters Association, because a little
sure.
before I got there, most of the people in there made their living doing keynote speeches at big conferences. But nowadays it is transformed. It's anybody who uses the spoken word. I think they're actually coming up with a, you know, a category for podcasters to be members, because podcasters are speakers. And to be a speaker,
sure.
you don't have to be paid a big keynote fee. There's a whole model of people who speak from the stage and sell their coaching from the back of the room. And it used to be looked down upon, like, oh, they're hawking to the audience. Well,
yep.
Some of those people speak for free and make $100,000 in coaching and consulting in the back of the room. That's a lot more than I get paid to be there as the paid speaker. So it doesn't work for every association. It doesn't work for every meeting, but there are different types of meetings. Plus, some meetings don't let you sell and they don't pay. It's just a chance to get exposure. So you have
sure.
to find out, where do you fit in the world of speaking? And I fit into the world where I was paid. I liked that part. And that's what the National Speakers Association brought me. I mean, it's a networking and education organization. But what it really
yep.
brought me was it brought me into contact with other non-famous people who were making a living speaking at association and corporate conferences of about the size I spoke at, who spoke on topics similar to mine. They spoke on, you know, many of them spoke on sales, on marketing, on, you know, things along the lines that my connection speech that I started off with, my networking speech, tied in. So I learned that if there's other people making money doing this, I could make money doing this. So getting around
yeah.
people, the first thing I ask anyone who wants to become a speaker is, how many speaker friends, and I mean honest to God friends, go to their house for dinner, type friends,
yep.
how many speaker friends do you have? And most people say none, and I say, then I don't think you can make it in the business. I think you have to study the business
right.
as a business, find out the different sections, find out what section you fit into, and then make friends with people who are doing it. And if I hadn't found the National Speakers Association, I never would have learned about the business and all the nuances and different ways to be in the business. And if I hadn't learned that, I would have thought, like a lot of people do, a speaker is a speaker is a speaker. The guy who spoke at the Rotary Club and Tony Robbins are both speakers. Yeah, they're not in the same business.
Right.
If you're famous, you're in an entirely
no.
different business.
Oh, yeah.
So
true. Yep.
So to answer your question,
and there's also
the National
and there's also the Public Speakers Association too, the PSA, because it's NSA and PSA, Public Speakers Association, that's another association as well.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, the National Speakers Association was the bomb because of who was in it,
yeah.
who was in it,
mm-hmm.
Not so much locally. We didn't really have a strong chapter locally at the time. We do now.
Sure.
But nationally, I started going to the national conference, and there's 3,000 speakers there. And then I start going to the winter conference, and there's 400 speakers there. And you start showing up
wow.
enough. And it took about 3 years for me to make real friendships. But I'll tell you something.
Wow.
I mentioned before, I was in a fraternity in college. I was a pretty social guy in high
mm-hmm.
school. When we moved to Austin, we made a whole bunch of friends. I got involved with a thing called Young Men's Business League. And, you know, my wife and I met a whole bunch of young professionals. And so we've always had a decent circle of friends. But if you were to say, Tom, who are your 10 closest friends of your lifetime? Five of them are people I met at the National Speakers Association, and I only joined 8 years ago. So I look over a lifetime, and five of my 10 most meaningful, influential friends in my life are people I've only known for the last 4 to 8 years. And
mm-hmm.
I'm taken aback by that. That means that these people leapfrogged over a whole lot of other people who I still love and adore. But to answer
yeah.
your question, the National Speakers Association was the resource that exposed me to what the opportunities were for me to actually build this business.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's my next step is to get involved with NSA. I hear a lot of people talking about it because I do stuff with PSA. But, yeah, that's definitely – I think that's my next step. So I really appreciate you sharing that. Really appreciate
well,
that.
Well, and the great thing for you is I showed up at my first conference in Phoenix in 2009, and I walked around. I didn't know anybody. I knew zero people. How many speaker friends do you have? The answer was zero, and I knew nobody.
Yeah.
And now, granted, you know, I don't mind hanging out in a bar with a beer by myself and talking to the person next
sure.
to me. And my friend Patrick
I have a friend whose name's Patrick Henry, and named after the famous founding father, Patrick Henry. In fact, if you Google Patrick Henry, you can't find him because the founding father in Boston took over all of the Google juice. But he's PatrickHenrySpeaker.com. You find him there. But Patrick and I met at my first NSA, and he and his wife and I talked at the bar, and they'd been around the NSA for a long time. Both of his father was a professional speaker, and his mother was the assistant for a professional speaker. So they grew up in the business, mm-hmm. and they had met through being teenagers of, you know, speakers and in the speaking business. And Patrick became a professional speaker. So they'd been around for years. I met them the first night at NSA that I ever attended in the bar. We had a nice conversation and we drank some wine for a couple of hours. And apparently his wife said later, "I really liked that guy we met. Too bad most of the people we meet never come back again." And now they're like some of my dearest friends in the world. But she said, yeah, she goes, "I remember meeting you." And I thought, what a shame. He probably won't be back because so many people go one time and never come back.
Right.
And now I've been nine years in a row. Now they can't get rid of me.
That's funny. That's great. So on the flip side of that, who gave you the best resource that you've used during your journey, and what was that resource?
Oh, boy. You know, I have to say that I'm going to give credit to Harvey McKay, who is a professional speaker,
okay.
who, when I first wanted to get into the business, I saw him speak at a conference in Austin, and I talked to him afterwards, and I wrote him a letter, and he wrote me back, and he gave me some advice, and I read all of his books, and I have to say that he was so genuine. Now, he was famous by the time I met him, but previous to that, he'd been a sales guy. He bought the company he worked for. He was a CEO. Then he wrote some books that were New York Times bestsellers, and he became very famous. But he was also very genuine. So the best thing he gave me was the fact that you could approach somebody who was a New York Times bestseller, mm-hmm. who was making giant figures as a speaker, and they would write you back and talk to you. And the next time he came to Austin, he needed someone to pick him up at the airport, and I said, "I'll do it." And I got to spend the day with him, driving him around to some meetings. And he gave me the gift of, even if you're famous, don't be a dick. Just be there. If people want to talk to you about the business, always find a way to do it.
That's awesome. That's a great piece of advice. And
can I say that
point.
On your show? Oh, my gosh. I just cussed on your show. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
I didn't know if I could say dick. Sorry.
No, it's fine. I think it's great that when you get to a certain level, you know, like the fluff kind of goes away. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like you're talking to somebody and they're just like, "Look, dude, like here's the point." Like, you know what I mean? So I absolutely love that. So
he was very good
you.
To me when. Okay.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say Harvey was very good to me when I was a wannabe. And now that I'm an established speaker, Speaker Magazine, which, by the way, is proof there is a magazine for everybody. Speaker Magazine asked me to write an article about who inspired me to get into the business. And so 2 years ago, maybe three, I forget, I wrote an article where I sat down and interviewed Harvey McKay. And he remembered who I was, and he had tracked my career. But he told me I could only have a half hour. And we ended up spending 90 minutes together. And when the article came out, you know, he sent me a nice note saying what a great article it was and really praised it in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he really gave me the gift of the fact that you can be a newbie, you can be established, or you can be really famous. And at the end of the day, you're just a person. And I will
right.
always remember, you know, Harvey, I think he's, you know, 80 years old now. I'll always remember him as this kind of probably, you know, 60-year-old, really full of energy, and he still is full of energy. But guy
sure.
who basically said, you know, follow your dream, but just be yourself.
That's awesome. So let's talk about you. So you are a professional master of ceremonies, speaker, trainer, consultant, and author, and you have a podcast called Cool Things Entrepreneurs Do. So
yes.
what made you do the podcast?
So 3 years ago, if you had a pulse, you were supposed to start a podcast because it seemed like everybody was doing that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was a podcast consumer. I'm on airplanes a lot and
sure.
I used to read a lot, but as I'm getting older, my eyes get tired faster. I have to carry mm-hmm. specs with me to be able to read. And, you know, I wasn't always remembering them.
And so podcasts were a great way to get more information, to disseminate it, to hear different opinions. So I started consuming podcasts. And then I was at a conference and the speaker was saying, if you ever feel you're in a rut in your career, and you got to realize 5 years ago is about the time I sort of plateaued out in my growth of my business.
Yeah.
Now it's growing again this year, but 3 years ago I was kind of in a plateau. And the speaker said, if you're ever in a rut, go out and interview 50 people who are successful. And when you get to the other side of 50 interviews, you can't be in that rut anymore. If they're successful, you're going to find inspiration from several of them. So I decided I was going to do this on my blog. I was going to interview 50 entrepreneurs who had grown their business beyond just the first level of whatever that was. I was going to seek out people who had grown to a certain level, plateaued, and grew again. And I was going to do it as a written interview, like interview them and then transcribe it and put it on my blog. And podcasts were just so wildly popular. I thought, well, maybe I'll give this a shot. So I launched into it with the idea that I would do 50 interviews in 6 months. And then I would shut it down. That was it. And now 3 years later, I'm about to have my third anniversary is 3 days from now. And I'm about to have my 300th episode.
Wow.
I've missed a few. I do it twice a week. I've missed maybe 10. That's why I guess I should be at 300 right now. But I missed a few. But I've only missed a handful in 3 years. And so we're only a couple of weeks away from episode 300. And the inspiration I get from every guest is more than I bargained for. So that's why I started it. And that's why Cool Things Entrepreneur keeps getting cooler.
Yeah. Yeah. I've looked at some of the guests on there and I'm like you read some of the show notes, you know, and really, if you can get some good copy, like it just makes you want to listen to the episode. And I'm like, you know, I think I'm like, where does he find these guys? Like, this is really cool. Like, no crap, Cool Things Entrepreneur, right? Like cool things they do. And I'm reading some of the stuff, and I listened to a couple of episodes. I'm like, this is so cool. Like, it's almost like a peel back, right? Like, let's peel the curtain back and let's really dig into how many different entrepreneurs we can find. You know what I mean? Because they're not all realtors or they're not all speakers or right.
And that's the purpose of it is we can learn from everybody. I can learn from the CEO of Ghirardelli Chocolate, who, when he was the head of sales, doubled the sales for this 100-year-old brand and grew it so much they made him CEO. So, you know, he was the head of sales and he doubled the company and they made him CEO. And interviewing him, and then you interview somebody who just got their – they left being an accountant and just got their real estate license. And you learn something from both of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, absolutely. I've learned a ton from the guests that I've had on here. And it just never ceases to amaze me, just that one thing. And you're like, what? Like, all right, I never would have thought about it that way. Thanks for, thanks for letting me know. Definitely love that. So how about the Master of Ceremonies? How fun is that?
So it's not for everybody. In fact, a lot of speakers call me up and they go, I want to do the Master of Ceremonies thing. And I think they think, oh, it's something different I can sell. But you have to realize two things. One is it's not valued by the client at the same level as a keynote. Like they'll pay a famous person $40,000. They don't pay me that, but they'll pay a famous person $40,000 to do the keynote. And then somebody said to me the other day, they have a 3-day conference. They go, oh, our budget for the MC is $4,000 for 3 full days. And I'm like, good luck. You know, I think that's awesome. But good luck. It pays more than a single speech, but it doesn't pay 3 days worth of speeches. So for me, I like it because I like helping clients make a great experience. And so the way it came about for me was I was the opening keynoter and I did this whole thing about how do we make this the best conference ever? How do we connect with the human beings in the audience? And people got really into it and the conference was awesome. And the CEO of the company said, I have to have you back next year, but I can't have the same keynote, can I? And he goes, what if you were the MC? Could you take your content and break it up into little nodules every time you come up, you know, the morning session, the afternoon. And I said, yes, and I did. And it turned out I was able to do it. So I take my connecting with people and how do we make this the best conference ever talk.
Yep.
And I chop it up into 5 and 7 minute segments. And so I'm not just emceeing, I'm bringing content to the table that's impacting the conference, but I'm going back to a conference for a big tech company, giant, like 5,000 person users conference for this software.
Wow.
And they used me 2 years in a row. But after 2 years in a row, they decided, you know, this isn't the Tom show. I mean, we can't have the same guy. So they used somebody else.
Right.
She was great, but they decided they wanted me back. And so what I'm doing for them is I'm retooling part of my deal.
Sure.
Is I'm retooling how I MC. So I'm still going to do the networking piece, but I'm taking a couple of improv classes between now and next May so that I can learn to sort of watch what's going on with the conference and then weave it back around and do some sort of what you call like content weaving, like reporting back to the audience, things that have been going on in the breakout sessions that maybe they missed. I'm making it more of a performance of the whole conference and weaving the pieces in of things I've observed. So I like doing that. I like the fact that I'm having to stretch the envelope. But here's the deal about being the MC. You're on for the whole 3 days. If you're in the elevator, you're the MC. If you're the MC, you're the host of the event. So if you're one of these people who gets burned out by, like, if you're a little bit more of an introvert, you get burned out from, like, all the parties and the people. Part of my contract says I will go sit in the bar for an hour every night just in case anybody wants to talk to me. And at most conferences, people do. They want to buy me drinks. They want to have a conversation. They want to tell me their stories of who they've met. Sometimes they don't, but that's part of my deal is I'm going to be visible at every lunch, at every meal. I'm going to go to your awards ceremony. And even if I don't have a role, I'm going to be present as a member of the community of the conference. And a lot of speakers are like, oh, wait a minute, that's exhausting. I don't want to be MC.
There's a reason why I asked you that question. So tomorrow, speaking at a conference called, or actually an event called A Life Worth Living, and I'm one of the keynote speakers. There's two of us. I'm one of the keynote speakers, but I'm also the MC. So, and I've MC'd like military ceremonies, but everything's scripted and there's a flow through it because it's written in a book somewhere, you know, but this is going to be my first master of ceremonies, like the event host, like you said. So we'll see.
You're going to do great, but I'll give you some live coaching right here on the air and then you can let us know how it goes. So the role of the keynote speaker and the role of the MC are two drastically different roles. Now I often do them at the same conference. Right? I do them at the same event. However, they're very different. When you're the MC, I mean, when you're the keynote speaker, you get to live out that life that I kind of wanted to being an actor. You're a performer. When you're the speaker, when you're the featured keynote, people always say, oh, it's not about me, it's about the audience. Well, if you're the keynote speaker, you've got to be a performer. It's got to have a little piece about you because otherwise it's just going to suck. So you've got to be big if you're the keynote because it is a little bit about, hey, I'm taking you on this journey. But when you're the master of ceremonies, it's about the other speakers and making them look good. And more importantly, it's about the audience and making the audience know that this conference is about them. That in order to make this conference great, it really depends on each and every person in the audience. And I'm not a humble guy. And so I had to learn to be able to turn down Tom and turn up all that other stuff as the MC, because as a keynoter, you want to be a big personality or else you might just dulve it to death.
That's a good advice. Cause we're doing the two keynotes and then we're doing like a break and then we're going to go right into like a panel discussion and I'm going to facilitate the panel of the psychologist.
All about the panelists.
And in fact,
I've had people say to me, wow, that was a personality shift. And it's not because I'm the same guy. I'm not playing a character, but it's the level of here's my keynote to here's your conference. It's subtle.
Right. Sure. Perfect. Well, I appreciate that. And I will definitely send you a message and let you know how it went. Definitely. Yeah. So Life Transformation Radio listeners, if you're listening and Tom has said something that resonated with you or you have any questions, by all means, call in 657-383-1109. Again, the number is 657-383-1109. So, Tom, as we wrap up, because I understand that you're about to speak somewhere and you're about to go on stage soon. So as we
I'm in a hotel room at a resort about 2 hours outside of Austin. overlooking a lake. It's a pretty nice, but it's a pretty rural resort. So it's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So where are you headed now? What kind of new adventures or businesses that are coming up? And fam, you said you got the 300th episode of Cool Things Entrepreneurs Do podcast. But what kind of new adventures do you have coming up? And businesses,
so family? I'm weaving the podcast into my speaking business, meaning that part of what I'm doing is I'm interviewing the other speakers who are going to be at conferences that I'm at. I'm interviewing the CEO of the companies I'm speaking for, and I'm doing some of this 6 months out and weaving it in as part of my offering to them, or I'm walking around their trade show floor with my mobile studio interviewing people about entrepreneurship in their industry. And so I'm trying to merge the two a little bit more so that I can help my clients get more traction by putting them onto cool things entrepreneurs do. So that's one thing that I'm doing. The second thing is that I'm trying to get to Pittsburgh to speak as much as possible in the next 2 years. I don't discount my fee very much, but I'll go to Pittsburgh for $1.95 and a chicken dinner, which actually that's not true. It costs more than $1.95.
So it has to be Pittsburgh?
But within a two-hour drive of Pittsburgh, I will negotiate. I don't usually negotiate fees because it costs what it costs. But if it's Pittsburgh,
right,
you could get me for my Austin rate, right? Because obviously speakers have like a local rate. You get to sleep in your own bed. And the reason is my daughter's a junior in college in Pittsburgh, and I love it when somebody brings me to Pittsburgh and I can make a little bit of a profit and still get to visit my kid and take her and her boyfriend out to dinner or maybe go see a Penguins game. That's like
awesome.
I love the Penguins. And I only became a Penguins fan when she moved to Pittsburgh 2 years ago. And everybody says, oh, you're like a fine weather fan, right? You showed up right, you know, with the Stanley Cup. I became a Penguins fan at the beginning of that season. What I saw was they hadn't won the Stanley Cup in a few years until I became a fan. And now that I've been a fan, they've won it twice. So I think the variable is I need to get to a Penguins game this season.
Right.
Because both seasons I went to one game, they won.
Yeah, well, I'm from Detroit, okay? So I'm a little upset that you're a Penguins fan because Detroit Red Wings the Penguins.
I saved that for the end of the episode so that you couldn't cut me off.
Yeah.
Hey, here's a hockey note. One of my buddies from high school, his son just signed with the Minnesota Wild this week. So I actually sort of know, once removed, a professional hockey player.
That's awesome. So I used to play hockey as well, semi-pro hockey. I was on travel leagues and like local, you know, like a local like city team hockey. Like that's what I did.
Uh-huh.
So my goal was to get NHL.
Kid,
but
this kid set a dream. This kid set a dream
there you go.
Like 10 years old that he wanted to be in the NHL, and he just signed with the Wild, and he had moved away. But we had babysat him once when he was 7 months old, and he kept hitting my daughter and pulling her hair because he was like 7 months old. She was 7 months old.
Uh-huh.
So I told my daughter, because she's a Penguins fan, I said, you have to go to the game when they played the Wild, and you could say, the first time that kid ever threw a punch, it was at me.
Oh,
she doesn't know
that's awesome.
Now, an adult,
yeah.
But I said, you were whacked in the head and had your hair pulled by a professional hockey player. Granted, you were 7 months old, but whatever.
Sure. That's amazing. Heck yeah, it's all about how you look at it, right?
That's right.
Awesome. So as we close the show, this is the moment where we have a shameless plug. You can plug your friend, a quote, websites, Facebook, your own products, movies, give a shout out to whatever you want. This is your time to shine. I mean, you've been keep crushing it all episode, but this is your moment to shine. Shameless plug. Go.
God, I hate to plug myself, but I can't think of anybody because I thought of 10 people and I only get one. So I'm going to go with my group coaching program. I have a program called the Potential Mastermind Group. And if anybody feels like they're trying to advance in their career and they feel stuck and they've always thought that getting involved with one of these group masterminds was a great idea, what's wonderful about it is it's only $595 for 6 months. That's not per month. That's for 6 months. And we have a Zoom call every Monday night, and we are really focused on how do you get over that gap between your God-given potential and the results you're getting in your career. And it's totally the best deal going, and I've got to plug it. Go to potentialmastermind.com, and you'll learn everything you need to know about it, and then you get to talk to me every week.
There you go. So, heck yeah, man. Give the website one more time.
Potentialmastermind.com.
There you go. 10X your business, 10X your life. So as we wrap up, deliver your best nugget of knowledge that will motivate, transcend, and inspire someone.
So, Sean, this comes from my dad, and I told you my dad lived to the ripe old age of 99. He was born in 1914, and he died in 2013. So he got to see what arguably, not even arguably, he got to see what was the best 100-year span in human history. And he always told me one thing. And I take it as my own quote, and my daughter goes, wait a minute, that was Grandpa's quote. I said, he's dead. I can have it. But my daughter says I have to give him credit.
Sure.
I told my daughter, when I die, you can have it. She said, no, it's Grandpa's quote. My dad always said, be slow to anger and fast to forgive. And I'll tell you what, I've lived by that since I was a teenager, and it's gotten me through a lot. I don't get angry really fast. I do. You can piss me off. But
sure.
Be slow to anger and fast to forgive, and it takes care of most of the problems you have with other
people. Awesome. That's the best advice I could ever hear. Slow to anger. I mean, because people get
fast
really super mad, like super quick.
Oh, really?
You know what
fast.
I mean? They get super mad.
People get mad so fast, and they think it's all about them. The other person's not doing it to them. The other person hasn't even thought of them. People don't think about you as much as you think they think about you. So people get angry all the time because they think, oh, she tried to slight me. No, she just did something stupid. It had nothing to do with you. Right. So just be slow to anger. And then if you're legitimately angry because they really did do something, be fast to forgive. Unless they're, you know, a total, you know, yo-ho, then get rid of them. But if it's one of your friends or one of your family, slow to anger and fast to forgive.
Perfect. Perfect. So give a call to action. We always end the show with a call to action. So what should someone do today? We talked about going to your online coaching program. We talked about some of the books that you have written, you know, because you've written 12 books. We've talked about the books, and I'm assuming that the books are available on your website at tomsinger.com and on Amazon. Can I find them on Amazon?
Yep. Yep. And I'll tell you
perfect.
A little secret. If you go to tomsinger.com, spelled T-O-M-S-I-N-G-E-R, you will still get to Tom, T-H-O-M-S-I-N-G-E-R.com, because I own both URLs.
Nice. That's super smart. That is super smart because people don't realize the T-H.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of people who are T-O-M-S-I-N-G-E-R who are mad at me.
I bet. That's awesome. So give a call to action. What should someone do today to 10X their life?
Go listen to podcasts. You don't have to listen to my podcast, but go listen to podcasts in the area of things you're trying to do. If you like Sean's podcast, go backwards and listen to his past episodes. If somebody you know has a podcast, and don't just listen to the celebrities. I mean, I think Gary Vee is as great as the next person, but all these people are like, oh, I'm listening to Tim Ferriss. Well, great. Why don't you go listen to the show that not everybody else is listening to, and maybe you'll get a little different story. You'll get a little different thing because there's a lot of people who aren't famous who are doling out a ton of great information that will impact your soul. So find a few of those people. And I've always said, don't stalk the celebrities. Celebrities are great, but they're playing a game. They're just the Kardashians, you know, without the makeup. The celebrities are just playing a game. Go find the real people who are in the trenches doing things and read their books, listen to their podcasts, take their classes, sign up for their things. And I think that's where you're going to get better results, and you're going to be able to get their attention. You know, you could reach out to Tim Ferriss or Gary Vee all day long, and I'm pretty sure they're not going to call you back. They might tweet you, but they're not going to call you. Where a lot of the people who I listen to their stuff, I email them and my phone rings, and they're like, hey, let's talk about that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I got a guy, I'm not sure if you know John Vroman, V-R-O-M-A-N, John Vroman. He lives in Austin, and he is an amazing speaker. He is?
Yeah, I live in Austin.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I thought you meant like literally like next door. I thought you meant like next door.
No, he's not my neighbor, but.
I got you.
But
yeah,
he lives in
so I'm going to definitely connect you guys together. Because he has an amazing stuff that he's doing. Like, he would be awesome for the podcast or whatever. But I'm going to hook you guys up because I saw that you both live in Austin. Definitely hooking you guys up and expanding that network of people. Definitely
totally.
Do that.
And, you know, I'll just ignore the introduction and be a jerk. No, of course I'll go. Any friend of Sean's is a friend of mine. What are you talking about?
Right. So I cannot thank you enough. This has been amazing. I loved meeting you. We have a mutual friend in Tim Rode
from One Life Fully Lived, and he had mentioned that you were going to be at the New Media Summit. I shook your hand. Like, you're the most genuine person that I could talk to. You know, no big heads, no, like, oh, I'm better speaker than you. Like, I mean, you're so down to earth, caring, and I appreciate the time that you've spent here and also at New Media Summit. I have enjoyed getting to know you, and I look forward to learning more about you and everything that you got going on.
Yeah, here's to a long, long friendship, Sean. You're a good guy, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I definitely look forward to it. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's my honor to be a guest on a show like this. I mean, you're transforming people. That's awesome. It's in the title.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, we will connect again. And like I said, thanks for coming on the show.
Excellent. And you have to say yes to what I'm about to ask you. Will you be a guest on Cool Things Entrepreneurs Do?
I would love to
be
a
guest on my
show.
Podcast?
Perfect. I would love
that
to.
That makes me happy.
Awesome. I would absolutely love to. Yes. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Life
Transformation Radio listeners, this has been another impactful episode of Life Transformation Radio, where we transform lives from people who are like Tom said, we're in the trenches, we're doing it every day, and we're not full of ourselves. We're not, you know, not approachable. Like, call us, text us, Facebook us, LinkedIn. Like, we're everywhere. You can find us. And so as we close the show, I always close it by saying, live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out the values that you hold in your heart. I call that living your brand. So until next time, have a good night.